On 88.1 WIPR, I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Maryland Morning. Catherine Pugh is a big step closer to her dream of becoming Charm City's next mayor. Chris Van Hollen and Kathy Shalega vie to replace Barbara Mikulski in the Senate. Award-winning reporter Jane Miller from WBAL-TV on what this historic election means. Then,
no justice, no peace! No justice, no peace! No justice, no peace!
Taking stock 1 year after the violence that followed the funeral of Freddie Gray. Entrepreneurs B. Cole and Aisha Pugh moved to Baltimore from Oakland, California, established a business, and invested in real estate. They're working to connect African-American innovators across the country. Why the Dovecote Cafe, just blocks from Penn and North, could be part of a bright future for post-uprising Baltimore. And the poet, activist, and scholar K. Wise Whitehead on her new book, Race Brave, inspired by the uprising. First, the news.
I'm producer Rob Sivak. To catch the news, you'll need to listen to us live on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings at 9 o'clock on 88.1 FM in Baltimore and Frederick, 106.9 in Ocean City, and streaming online at wypr.org/listen. Now, on with the show.
It's Maryland Morning on 88.1 WIPR. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us on this, the one-year anniversary of the violence that racked the city after the funeral of Freddie Gray. So a little later in the program, we'll have a conversation about Baltimore's future with the poet activist K. Wise Whitehead and two entrepreneurs who chose to start a new business just a few blocks away from the corner of Penn and North. B. Cole and Aisha Pugh are business innovators who are building community as much as they're building a business. And they're creating a national network of young people of color who are changing the landscape in any number of industries. That's all coming up in a bit here on Maryland Morning. But first, what would a talk show be without a little post-primary prognostication? And I've got one of the great prognosticators of all time sitting here in the studio with me, our good buddy Jane Miller, who is the hardest working woman in show business. I got off the air at 11 o'clock last night.
I went home,
I turned on the TV, you were still on the air, and I'll admit.
We love election nights.
I'll admit, I smirked a little.
Yeah.
I said, nah, 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 nah. I'm not proud, but I did. Jane Miller, of course, is an award-winning investigative reporter for WBAL Television. She has covered Charm City politics and a whole lot more for a whole lot of years. So, what do you make of this, that last night, Senator Pugh, Catherine Pugh, won an election in which about 54% of the people who voted, and it's a lot more people who voted this time than the last
time. Yes, correct,
for mayor,
thankfully.
Voted for somebody else.
Yeah, well, that happens with that many people in the field. You can kind of expect that result, and we don't have a runoff. So, but I do think when you look at the, clearly the substantive votes were at the top of those that race with Sheila. This was a race between Sheila Dixon and Catherine Pugh, with candidates sprinkled around that were going to pull votes from one place or another. So what do we draw from it? You know, it's interesting, Tom. I this morning went back and watched the confrontation between Catherine Pugh and Geraldo Rivera at exactly this time last year. Do you remember that?
Yeah, on Fox News.
And the conservative media really slammed her for, you know, sticking up for the protesters, blah, 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 blah. But what she was really doing, she really de-escalated a situation at Pennsylvania North or in West Baltimore when it was a very tense time, the last week of April of 2015. And so I recall how she became, Catherine Pugh, stepped into a very difficult situation. And so I looked at her last night when she took that stage and I thought, wow, this is the journey that she's taken. Now, she's wanted to be mayor for a long time.
Yeah.
But I think that what we take away from this election is, first of all, in the mayor's race and throughout the city council races, a lot of people participated as candidates. And that's a really good sign.
And some very good,
absolutely,
solid,
there
authentic
are really good candidates
people
that didn't win last night.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Secondly,
the city council will change by
absolutely
eight new members out
absolutely
of 14.
Absolutely. Yeah. But at the end of the day, voters chose, by a thin margin, I mean, chose someone who has a lot of political experience, who has a lot of experience in the community, who's established in the community, who did assert herself last year when times were really tough, took on a leadership role when times were tough. And so they were looking for change, but not a lot of change, not a drastic change. They wanted someone they knew that they could essentially count on. And the other thing that I think was impressive last night, and I said this on television, is that when you looked at her stage, when she started to speak. It was a really diverse group of...
Yeah, Kevin Kamenetz, the county
Harford County executive was there.
Yeah, Harford
That's
County.
Exactly right.
Jim Smith was standing up there, the former transportation secretary and former county council executive in Baltimore County.
Yep. Kwame Rose.
Yeah.
I mean, that I've talked about a
from
lot
a
that yesterday.
To
yes,
Kwame,
exactly
to,
right.
To
I mean,
Kevin
he was
Kamenetz,
he voted for the first time yesterday. So if you talk about a turning of the page, I think we've turned a page. And this isn't the status quo group at all. You know, I interviewed Stephanie Rawlings Blake last week, and she said something that I thought was pretty revealing, is that she said what Freddie Gray's death and everything that happened around it told her about her life, as she reflected on her life, is that she was living on autopilot. And Baltimore was tired, clearly, of people living on autopilot.
You know, Kurt Schmoke famously said that he found out after he left office that mayor was a verb.
Yeah, that's right. You know? Exactly right. And that's what William Donald Schaefer would always tell me. I hate being governor. I love being mayor.
Yeah.
Because it's a get your hands dirty, do it kind of job. I mean, we'll see. But I do think that as we wake up this morning and we get about our day, when you look at 8 new members on the city council, a new mayor, it's going to be a substantially new administration. Who's going to change? I don't know. I mean, Catherine has talked a lot about her relationship with Kevin Davis. I think Kevin Davis will be the police commissioner for as long as until she thinks he shouldn't be. That's not her focus. That's what I found very interesting about this race. And I think that where some candidates really made a mistake in their campaigning, every mayor's race we've had since, you know, Kurt Schmoke decided not to run, and this was started by Martin O'Malley. What did Martin O'Malley run on? One single issue.
Crime.
Crime. So he became that mayor. And so what did we get from that? We got, you know, a homicide rate that was a little bit lower, but it was already dropping. And of course, then we had
an increase in incarceration.
Absolutely,
right?
The arrest rate soared, and there was investment in the city at that time. But that was not the theme, the major theme of this campaign. I did candidates' nights in the city council races, and they weren't talking about more policing; they were talking about more investment and more opportunity, and after school programs and preschool, and really trying to provide an environment in this city in which people can thrive. And what I think...
And they were saying that the best way to take a gun out of a person's hand is to give that person a job.
That's exactly right. Give them something else to do.
Yeah.
And I think that some candidates really missed the mark with that. Sheila Dixon included. I mean, she really talked a lot about, you know, that whole
policing strategy.
And that, I'm not saying that's not important. It is vitally important. But the problem is that we have made that, you know, the main event for so long at the expense, really, of some of the other initiatives and leadership ideas in this city that a mayor really needs to take hold of. And I think from what I'm hearing from Catherine Pugh is that what she talked about most in her campaign and last night was employment, opportunity, business investment, et cetera.
Right. And in a city which is majority African-American, mm-hmm. People looked at the race early on and said, well, we have these two white candidates, mm-hmm. Elizabeth Embry and David Warnock. Mm-hmm. They'll split the white vote. In fact, the white vote was split 3 ways because Senator Pugh got more of the white vote than either Mr. Warnock or Miss Embry. I mean, she is, in that way, a very unifying candidate.
She's always been seen as that.
Her connections in Annapolis, I think, were very appealing to a lot of people, saying, okay, we've got a Republican governor.
Correct.
We've got to have a voice down there in order to get some help. She does take credit, and I don't know if it's 100% deserved, but she takes credit for bringing $290 million to the city of mm-hmm. Baltimore from this last session.
She's very powerful. Powerful legislator. We're going to miss her in that regard.
Yeah.
Okay, so the inside baseball of this race is that the Embry campaign got pretty negative about Pugh with TV ads and mailers, et cetera.
Just in the last few days.
Suggesting that she was, you know, because of some issues about some of the donors to her campaign, that she was under investigation, et cetera. The Pugh campaign is never the liability is not on the campaign. The liability in those matters is on the donor. So the Pugh campaign is not under investigation. The inside story of the behind the scenes story is that the Dixon campaign was perfectly happy with that, because the way the Dixon campaign saw this race is that every white voter that Elizabeth Embry could peel off of Catherine Pugh was just fine with them. And I think
and
that
she came close. Miss Dixon did.
This was a very close election. And actually, if you
she won on election day.
Right. That's right. It was the early voting. Yeah. That's correct.
She got, you know, Sheila Dixon got about 1,000 more votes on yesterday than Senator Pugh did. But it was the early voting, and we don't know what the breakdown racially was in the early voting.
Well,
but
we do know that a lot of the Jewish voters voted early voting because of Passover.
During Passover.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
it'll be interesting to kind of break down those. And someone's going to do that. It was break down the precinct by precinct.
And the number of early voters in general was way up.
Yes, correct.
The number of voters in general is way up. The numbers aren't quite clear.
Correct.
I mean, the Sun's reported both 120,000, 130,000. We'll figure that out, you know, in the next day or two.
There were 30,000.
As opposed to 74,000 people who voted in the last Democratic mayoral primary, which, of course, did not coincide with a presidential election.
Yes. Yeah.
And Sheila Dixon, she tweeted last night in all caps, "I'm not through yet." What do you think?
Well, you know, she, you know, I heard voters say that her campaign message where she said reclaim Baltimore was a kind of a turnoff to some voters that may have voted for her otherwise. I always thought that Sheila had her number and that number was it. That, you know, it was somewhere around 24-25%. I think it was a little higher than that last night. It was higher than that last night. I don't know.
Because you had people like, you know, David Warnock was telling people, if I get 30,000 votes, I can win the election. That turned out not to be true.
Correct.
Kathy won, you need
37.
Kathy won with 45,000 votes.
Right.
So,
it
was close.
Right.
You know,
correct.
So,
yeah. So I think that I don't know what we'll see from Sheila. It's going to be interesting to see if she and Catherine, who obviously have known each other for a long time, if there's some role. I don't know. I'm not sure.
There were a lot of good ideas from some of the lesser prominent candidates.
Oh, absolutely.
Across the board. Great to see this Senator Pugh, you know, take a close look at some
of those. Calvin Young, who's one of those, was at her party last night.
Yeah.
Yes, that's correct.
Very impressive.
And I think the bottom line, the good news of the day is that this was an election in which many, many people ran.
Yeah.
And no, they didn't win.
And a lot of good ideas got out.
Absolutely. And let's hope they're not going to sit in the sideline.
Jay Miller is the chief investigative reporter with the 11 Investigates I team at WBAL Television. Complete coverage of yesterday's primary continues today on WYPR on midday with Sheila Cast and with reports from the WYPR news team this afternoon during All Things Considered. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. After a break for the news, Baltimore, a year after the uprising. Stay with us. Nathan?
Thanks, Tom. You're listening to the Maryland Morning Podcast, a service of your public radio, WYPR, in Baltimore. Find more podcasts at WYPR.org and tell us what you think by email, mdmorning@WYPR.org. Now, back to the podcast.
Baltimore.
One year ago today, Baltimore was convulsed in violence following the funeral of Freddie Gray, a young African-American man who died while in the custody of Baltimore police. His death came during a steady flow of news that many other young black men in cities across the country had also died at the hands of law enforcement. In the years since the paroxysms of rage in Penn North and elsewhere that led to hundreds of businesses being damaged or destroyed and further rupturing of the relationship between police and communities of color, much has been said and sung about the racial and economic inequality that undergirds what has come to be known as the uprising. After generations of people suffered and continue to suffer from unequal access to good education, job opportunities, wealth acquisition, and health care, all manner of panels and forums, scholarly research, and policy debates have taken place in search of solutions to what seem like intractable problems. Some of those debates took place in the context of a hotly contested mayoral campaign, and one of the themes that recurred at numerous mayoral forums concerned the role of the mayor in restoring Baltimore's image. We heard a lot about how the pictures of Baltimore that were broadcast around the world last April 27th harmed the image of the city and created the perception that Baltimore was, among other things, a bad place to do business. Well, this morning, a contrary view. from two people who chose Baltimore as the place to start one of their new businesses and to expand opportunities for African-American entrepreneurs across the country. B. Cole and Aisha Pugh are the owners of the Dovecot Cafe in Reservoir Hill and the leaders of Brioxy, a network of young, innovative people of color who are creating economic opportunity for themselves and others. We're joined for this conversation by a great friend of this program, the poet, scholar, and activist Dr. Kay Wise Whitehead. She's on the faculty of Loyola University, Maryland, and the author of a new collection of poems inspired by the uprising. It's called Race Brave. Good morning to you all. It's great to have you here.
Good morning.
So, Dr. Kay, let's start with you. You did an event just this last weekend at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of Maryland African American History and Culture about storytelling, about the narrative of Baltimore that is continuing to evolve in this past year since the uprising on the 27th of April. Tell us how that narrative, in your view, has evolved, in fact, and what are the stories that people are sharing these days?
Well, this particular program that was funded by the Maryland Humanities Council, they offered a number of grants to talk about what happened in the city during the uprising and what's been taking place since then. I work with the students of Douglas High School, and for some, Douglas High School is ground zero. If we talk about what happened just a year ago today by Douglas High School and by Mundawin, well, when I spoke to the students there, they said so many people had told them what to think about the uprising, but nobody ever asked them what they thought about it. And so I spent 6 weeks working with them, and I pulled in Kondwani Fidel, who's Baltimore's local poet, to work with me to help the students learn how to tell their stories, to record their stories, and to be able to share their stories. And the things that I heard from them is that I had all these wonderful ideas about the uprising being this moment of change, of activism, of progression in the city. And for them, they saw it as a moment when people kind of came into their neighborhoods with this notion of fighting for justice. But at the end of the day, people got back in their cars and went back home. Mm-hmm. That they had to live there, and they don't see a lot of change happening on the ground. And they're challenging this notion of what does change actually look like when you still can't get fresh fruit, you still can't get fresh vegetables, you still don't have all the books you need in your school. What does change look like when you're on the ground?
Indeed. And part of the narrative that I've been so impressed with is the narrative that includes the starting of the Dovecot Cafe, which, full disclosure, is in my neighborhood. It's right around the corner from my house. And I can attest to not only the fact that it has the greatest peach upside down cake in the world, but it has brought our neighborhood together. So Aisha and Cole, Aisha, let me ask you, this journey to Baltimore began from Oakland, California, with an invitation of all places to the White House. Tell us how this story evolved, that you guys ended up here starting this new cafe.
Sure. So the short story is that Cole, being as dynamic as she is, was invited to a White House holiday party. And she got a plus one, and the honor of being her wife for almost 13 years meant that that plus one, I called dibs on it and was able to go to the White House. And
if ever you were going to call dibs,
exactly,
that's
I called dibs. And usually, I'm not pressed to go on a lot of things, and this one, I was like, no, I'm going. I already got my dress. So we were in D.C. But the backstory to that is that we tell this story pretty publicly. Is I'm from Brooklyn, raised in Brooklyn, of the 80s and 90s generation, and Cole was born in D.C. And we were living in Oakland, where we met, and we had watched our cities basically erode, and not in a way that now looks very publicly positive, like everybody talks about and represents Brooklyn and going to Oakland. But to us, we watched the erosion of culture. And so we had been on a search of a new place to call home, where we felt we could be embedded in community in a way that still felt gritty and lovely and spiritful. And we were in a search for this. And we were in D.C. at the holiday party. And we came to Baltimore to visit my uncle, who had been living here for about 13 or 14 years at the time. And it was as though the heavens opened, and you imagine doves like singing, and we were like,
life is a movie.
Yeah, always, and always with like some soundtrack attached. And we realized that this was it, and this preceded you know, the Freddie Gray murder, our dissension and seeing Baltimore and loving it. And we went home back to Oakland and started thinking about, okay, is this really the move? And then, of course, the revolution here was televised, and we realized that we needed to move with speed to Baltimore, because we also knew the recipe of gentrification is that there's these scare tactics that happen. The media takes hold of one story and pushes Black wealth out of a community, and then white wealth comes in. And we knew we needed to bring the money we had into the community.
Sure. And Cole, this is what's extraordinary about this to so many people is that for an event that for the people running the civic image, the civic branding of our city, it was a disaster. There were all these stories about how the negative advertising about Baltimore was worth X number of millions of dollars. It was an attraction to you. It speeded up and intensified your commitment to come to Baltimore.
Absolutely. We had already made the decision that we wanted to come. We had actually looked at 7 communities around the country, from Detroit to Philly to Mobile, Alabama. We thought about East LA. And ultimately, there's a confluence here in Baltimore of resources that, quite frankly, most people can't see because of the historical racism in the city, the most significant of which is that this city has one of, if not the largest concentration of young Black innovators in the entire country. But because they don't have access to resources, unfortunately, that resource hasn't been harnessed. And so for us, where everyone else saw the uprising as a riot, right, we saw it as one of the largest civic demonstrations of a generation of young people in this city who were willing to be engaged and to speak to each other, and relationships built and truces forged and all kinds of collaboration that emerged in that moment that was not fully seized and capitalized, I think, in a way that we were really excited to be a part of. And that's a lot of what drew us here.
B. Cole and Aisha Pugh are the co-owners of the Dovecot Cafe and the animating force behind Brioxy, which is a network of Black entrepreneurs and innovators around the country. Dr. K. Wise Whitehead is the author, most recently, of Race Brave, a collection of poems published by Apprentice House. It's Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Tom Hall. So, Dr. K., this chasm between the narrative that, like, the kids at Douglas High School you were working with, the story that Aisha and Cole are telling us this morning, the chasm between that and this perception, is that perception a white thing? Is it a media thing? Is it even a Black thing to a certain extent, the perception of our city, and as opposed to sort of what's going on in the ground? It seems that the chasm is real and that it's wide.
I think it is very real and it's very wide. And I think there are a number of perceptions about the city. If you are outside the city and you're reading about Baltimore, then you see it as The Wire. You see it as the homicide episode being played out in real time, which is why when Baltimore kind of had that moment last year, when we moved from kind of peaceful protest to this out and out huge rebellion that was taking place, people were concerned all over the country. I had family and friends and calling me saying, is the whole city on fire? I'm like, how can the entire city be on fire? Why are you believing the narrative rather than pushing past that to get to the truth? Why are you not on Twitter? Why are you not on Facebook getting the real story rather than looking to television to answer that story for you? I think if you are a Black person in Baltimore, you have a perception about the city, about where you fit in. Do you live in Freddie Gray's neighborhood, or do you live in Hamden? Do you live in Fells Point? Do you live in Mount Washington? I think neighborhood really matters here in terms of shaping your perception of what's going on. We saw that when last year our mayor put a curfew on the city, and the curfew was only enforced in certain neighborhoods. If you lived in Hamden, there was no curfew. If you lived in the Hamilton area, there was no curfew enforced. If you lived in Freddie Gray's neighborhood, it was enforced, and they were out there the entire time.
Aisha Pugh, it is about neighborhoods, and you have come into the neighborhood that we live in, Reservoir Hill, and really you're thinking about, you told me this a couple weeks ago, that you're really thinking about this cafe not so much as a coffee shop, but as a place to create community. What do you mean by that?
So our mission is community first, cafe second. And I think Kay kind of nailed it too, in terms of people need to see and envision possibility of change. And when we moved here, we were thinking, how do we land and have roots and build space where people can be seen and see others? And that is really the tipping point of of an investment in space. And so the cafe, yes, we believe in serving a good product. And the peach upside down cake is divine. Cole says it will change your life.
Has changed mine.
Right. You're a new man, Tom
Hall.
By
a factor of about 10 pounds.
But the essence of what we do is really to bring both small C and big C community together. So just showing folks that there is an investment in Reservoir Hill by Black people is really important because it is still a Black neighborhood, but it is on the precipice of not being that. And so it's important that the investment of commercial and commercial enterprises be Black owned. That's very important to us. And it's important in the Big C community that Baltimore City at large see that small Black businesses can thrive and should thrive and should be invested in, and that other Black entrepreneurs see Baltimore as a place where they can thrive. It's important for us to have a space for artists to feel as though that they can eat and be supported, where innovators and makers can come and feel like they can be in community with one another. So this idea of creating a space, it's a tiny little space, but it's pretty powerful, a space where you can come and, like I said, be seen and see others and really build networks in a way that just changes the narrative of we're a divisive community to creating a centralized force.
Yeah, and Cole, networking is a fundament of your philosophy and your work. Talk a little bit about Brioxy and what you're trying to accomplish with that organization.
Okay. So we're really excited. Brioxy is the first social innovation network. So the idea behind it is if you network, it's actually for young people of color, Black, Latino, Asian, Pacific Islander, Indigenous. We are on the precipice of a huge shift demographically in this country. Already in California, where we were founded and where we came from, 70% of the young people in the state of California are young people of color. And our hope and our vision is that while historically these young people have been under-resourced pretty dramatically, that pretty soon the entire country will be dependent on a generation of very, very diverse young people to lead community and to really support and build infrastructure. So it is on all of us to do that work. And Brioxy has been a vehicle to be able to harness and leverage that community and that conversation. And I think going back to this other question, which is that in communities of color, it's not just in Black communities. The same thing is happening actually in East Los Angeles, and is that we are telling the micro story of what's happening as though it is the macro reality. And that is the space that young people of color live in, that the small stories that people believe about their intelligence, about their opportunity, about their potential.
Yeah, represents the whole.
That is the space they live in. And as a result, it confines them. And so we're about harnessing that.
And we are going to pick up right there after we come back for a break for the news. Dr. K. Wise Whitehead of Loyola University of Maryland is the author of a new collection of poems called Race Brave. B. Cole and Aisha Pugh are the proprietors of the Dovecote Cafe, and they've got an organization called Brioxy. To find out more about the networking that Brioxy does with young innovators of color, there's an event on Friday afternoon from noon to 3 at Exit the Apple Gallery on Guilford Avenue, and we'll have a link to more details about that on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. If you're just joining us, we're commemorating the one-year anniversary of the uprising following the funeral of Freddie Gray. Dr. K. Wise Whitehead is here. She is associate professor at Loyola University of Maryland in the Communication Department. Her teaching and research focus on the intersections of race, class, and gender. She is also the author of a new collection of poems called Race Brave. We're also joined here in Studio A by B. Cole and Aisha Pugh of Brioxy, a network of young people of color networking and advocating for economic opportunity. They are also the owners of a great new spot in Reservoir Hill. It's on Madison Avenue. It's called the Dovecote Cafe. So, Cole, let me pick up where we left off before we took a break for the news, and that is about this micro story telling them, attempting to represent the macro story of the African American community. You talk about the scare tactics, and Aisha referred to this as well when we talked on the first half of the show. The fear that pervades the Black community, forcing them to leave the city, forcing them to give up on Baltimore. It's not just a matter of white flight; it's a matter of African American and people of color fleeing as well.
Absolutely. I think we can all agree that racism is equal opportunity in its ability to adopt or co-op a mindset. Unfortunately, there is a byproduct in this country around blackness that limits not just where you can go and what you can do, but actual access to capital. So we have this incredible conundrum where American culture is very driven by black culture. And American culture, in turn, really drives global culture. And so if black culture is at the heart of what drives American culture, young black people are the ones that actually give black culture its life. And so we've created a cycle that is not just here in Baltimore, it's really all over the country, but it is crystallized here where young people create the culture and the energy off of which the city thrives, and simultaneously are locked out of opportunity at every turn. And because the micro story is the space that they live in, it literally, ultimately, over time, it not only limits your options, but it limits what you believe is possible. And I think it goes back to what Aisha said, which is that the old model of young, mostly white people with incredibly big hearts coming into communities of color with an effort to not just save those communities, but to invest in them, that model doesn't work anymore. What it ultimately does is it creates and accelerates gentrification and displacement. That if we really want to do something different, here we have to think about what does it look like to actually invest in innovators of color so that young people in the neighborhood and the community can say, if you can do it, then I can do it. And then how? Tell me how you did it and show me how you did it.
Creating the paradigms, showing the models. Yeah. Kwame Opare, who's a dancer activist, calls this influx of white folks into communities with, as you say, you know, good hearts and good intentions, unaffiliated benevolence, you know, and that it's got to come from within and come from the ground up. Kay Whitehead, let me ask you to read a poem from your wonderful new book. You are a scholar. You've written scholarly books. You've written a beautiful memoir about raising your two African-American sons and now a book of poetry. Let me ask you to share one with us.
I will. This book of poetry is actually inspired by my oldest son on the day that Eric Garner was killed. He challenged me to write something every day about what was happening around the country. So in that 1 year between 7/17/14 and 7/17/15, you had Tamir Rice, you had Freddie Gray, you had what happened in Charleston, South Carolina. So the book is very sad in so many ways because it talks about, for me, a sense of hopelessness about what is happening to unarmed black people around the country with trying to still be hopeful because I am raising two black boys in America. This poem here is called Baltimore's Uprising at Last. I'm just going to read the last half of it. It was actually profiled in The Afro by Sean Yost, which I invite people to go take a look at that. We are who you are frightened of becoming, a manifestation of your very worst daymares, downtrodden bums carving out a righteous experience. We are who you have forced us to become, a blood-stained blemish of dreams long deferred, festering in the shadows, floating silently through our pain. Come and fly with us. Through the metals of our mind, we are Baltimore, jagged edges, imperfect flaw, but this is our life, our home, and we must claim it as our own.
Dr. Kay Wise Whitehead reading part of her poem from her new book, Race Brave. Thank you so much, Dr. Kay. Aisha, one of the fundaments of the work that you do, not only as part of Brioxy, but as, you know, with Dovecote and moving here to Baltimore, is real estate. You're buying property. You're owning stuff. And why is that so important? Why is that such an important dimension of the work and the mission that you're advancing?
Well, I think Cole speaks to it best, and like prefaced before, is that we've watched in despair the erosion of our cities and our communities, and it starts with ownership. And we didn't know that. You know, we all played Monopoly growing up, but we didn't know how real that was. And what happens is when you don't own the land, you are always vulnerable to being moved out. And so I always think of black people as like the nomadic people, and Cole references us as refugees, of where we just move to different spaces because we don't have ownership of land. And that's been historically, sadly, the case with the history of America. But the idea of owning property means that it is your decision how you use. You are much more invested in the land use, in the zoning, in the space, in the community, and you cannot be displaced because it's yours. And so this idea of ownership means that we own, and then we can be really intentional around how we use our space, and also that idea of discussing how you can own with other young Black people is really important, because this model of ownership in a mortgage is such a white model. We feel like this is not really what we do, but that's just not the case. And so it is important for us to lead by example in that. It's important for us to show investment in community by having our roots, so that we say, no, this is our property, we own it, we are not moving, and you should own and you should not move either. And that is really important to talk about as much as possible, that we are here to stay.
How many people do you employ at the Dubco Cafe?
Well, we just hired another chef. So now we are from 8 to 9, and now officially 10.
God bless. That's great. Yeah, and the Dubco Cafe isn't the only piece of real estate you are invested in here in Baltimore. I mean, it's one of a few.
Yeah, no, I think that to Aisha's point, our vision has been, what would it look like to create intentional community that ultimately we believe that it would take about $10 million a year to put 2,500 young people that grew up here, graduated from high school, have gone on to college, to come back and to invest in this community. And that if we just did that every year, it could literally alone be the transformation in 80% of the neighborhoods that people often talk about as needing that now. And so for us, we did our piece, and we're working with about 100 other young people to be invested in intentional community together.
Well, this has been a terrific conversation, and I'm grateful to all of you for coming in. And we will see you guys at the cafe. And Kay, we will see you back here on this show. And
absolutely.
In bookstores everywhere. You
anytime.
Know? All right. Thanks for coming by. Appreciate it. Dr. Kay Wise Whitehead's new collection of poems is called Race Brave. It's published by Apprentice House. B. Cole and Aisha Pugh are the owners of the Dovecote Cafe in Reservoir Hill. For information about Kay's book and about Brioxy, the network of young entrepreneurial people of color founded by B. Cole, come to our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. That'll do it for us this morning. Coming up Friday, Stephanie DeLuca from Johns Hopkins on her new book about poverty and opportunity called Coming of Age in the Other America. The stage directors Vincent Lancisi and Derek Goldman will talk about the two classics that they've got going on at the Everyman Theater, and Charisse Achampong, the winner of the Poetry Out Loud competition, shares her work with us before she heads to the national finals. That's all coming up Friday morning on Maryland Morning. Until then, for Nathan Sterner and the entire Maryland Morning team, I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.